Hey, everybody. Before we get into the show, I wanted to let you know we've got another live show coming up. We will be back at Maya Cinemas on Thursday, May 23rd for Furiosa, the latest in the Mad Max series. We are so excited for this one. Joining me to talk about it, we've got Sam Novak, Shahab Zargari, and Tony Gonzalez. A great lineup. It's going to be an awesome movie. We are so excited to talk about it. So make sure to check the show notes. There are opportunities to win tickets. You can also buy tickets, and we hope to see you there Thursday, May 23rd, 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas for Furiosa. Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what other movies may have inspired it. Today on the show, we are going to be doing a really cool indie film. But before we get into that, I just wanted to talk about a few things that we got going on here. First of all, as always, make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together. Thank you so much to everybody out there who is already subscribed. Thank you so much for your support. But if you're not subscribed yet, you could subscribe on pretty much any podcast app out there. You could also rate and review us on iTunes, and we really appreciate that. We're just a small independent podcast, and we're just really enjoying doing it for you guys. And we just want to get that feedback, make sure people are listening. And as always, we'd love to hear from you, so definitely get in touch. You can follow us on social media at PiecingPod. You could also go to our website, PiecingPod.com. where you can email me, and you can also sign up for the email list, which I recommend you do because we're going to be doing some really cool giveaways pretty soon, and that's how we're going to be selecting winners and all that, so definitely make sure you're signed up for the mailing list. You can also get in touch by joining our Facebook group, Piecing It Together, a movie discussion group. We've been having a lot of fun in there, and we'd love to get you all involved in it, so definitely come join the group, get involved. Talk movies. We'd love to have you there. Last week, we did a special episode where I just shared an episode of my other podcast, Bird Road. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you also check out Bird Road. That's another show that we do here on the All Points West Network. Actually, me and Q, the host of Bird Road, we're going to be traveling next week to the Podcast Movement Convention in Philadelphia. We are really looking forward to that. We're looking forward to meeting a lot of other podcasters and just lots of cool people. I also have a few interviews lined up already, and also we're going to be going to some events and stuff. We're actually going to be hosting a meetup, so it should be a lot of fun. We're really looking forward to that. And, you know, this show, we're now on episode 18, and I think after Podcast Movement, that's when this show is really, I mean, I'm going to start really kicking into high gear and just starting to do all kinds of things to make sure this show is getting heard and start revising it and making it the best show it could be. And that's why, once again, I just want to remind you here at the top of the show, before we get into this episode, we would love to hear your feedback, because as we continue to grow, we're going to continue to try to make the show better and better, and we definitely want to hear from you. So with that said, let's go into this new episode today. Today we're actually going to be looking at an indie film called In Memory Of, by director Eric Stanzi. I'm going to be talking with Chad Clinton Freeman, who is returning to the show again, about this movie. He actually brought this one to me. As many of you know, Chad was the founder and creator of the Polygrind Film Festival. And he would always show these kinds of crazy, you know, independent films. And he had become a big fan of Eric Stanzi. And so when his new movie came out, Chad was immediately like, we should cover this. We should talk about this. It's going to be a really cool movie. And I'm glad he did, because it's pretty crazy. Yeah, In Memory Of, this movie, it's about a woman who's diagnosed with a rare mental disease, and she volunteers for an experimental drug And let's just say things get insane. That's pretty much how it goes. But as you'll hear in my conversation with Chad Clinton Freeman, we get into some of the puzzle pieces, and we just talk about independent film in general, and it's a really fun talk, and let's jump in. Right, so today on the show, we have got back again, Chad Clinton Freeman. How you doing, Chad?
I'm doing great. Excited, actually, about this episode, too. So this should be fun.
Right on, man. Right on. Yeah, we are today doing, we haven't done a lot of these yet on the show, but this is like a real independent film. This wasn't a movie that was out in theaters, but it is out now on Blu-ray. And this is a movie that you wanted to cover because you're a fan of the filmmaker.
Yeah, actually a pretty big fan of Eric Stanzi, the director here. This movie, it's total independent. The only place you can get it is actually on the website of the filmmaker, wickedpixel.com. That's the only place you can buy it. You can't get it on demand or anything. You can't get it at Walmart. You have to go to that website to order it. So total independent movie. So when we say independent, we're not meaning, you know, it played at Sundance. I just wanted to make that clear. So Eric Stanzi, though, he's a filmmaker that I would say makes horror art house films underground films. And I first discovered him in the early 2000s. And actually there was a movie, Ice from the Sun, which is actually, it has a bit of a cult following with it. I liked it. I didn't love it, but it's definitely a very different and interesting movie. But then I saw the movie Scrapbook, and the movie Scrapbook is like one of the most disturbing movies I've ever seen. That's how it's just like, wow. It's like, so when we say underground, that's totally like the definition of an underground movie. I have been a fan of Eric's for a long time. And then also, in a way, filmmakers like him and Shane Ryan, who's another underground filmmaker, and Giuseppe Andrews, he's another underground filmmaker. Those are guys that really inspired me to do Polygrind back in 2010. I realized that there was these weird and different and unique movies out there. There were, you know, filmmakers that not a lot of people knew about, and not even like horror fans knew about, or fans of like independent cinema, because again, it's you know, not stuff that you're going to find on Netflix or Amazon or whatever. You have to still actually dig to find some of this stuff. So when I did have Polygrind going on, I did actually screen a couple of Eric's films. One of them was Ratline, which I am a big fan of that movie. Ratline, I screened that in actually the second year of Polygrind in 2011. And then later in 2013, it was actually when he was ramping up to do In Memory Of. It was the 10-year anniversary of one of his earlier movies, China White Serpentine. And I did an actual, a special, underrated gem showcase 10-year anniversary, for China White Serpentine. I'm a big fan of his. And so this one, it's been, I know since at least, like I said, 2013, he was ramping up to make it. And then I think he actually shot it in 2015. So, I mean, this has been a long time coming, this movie. So whenever I saw that it was coming out on Blu-ray, I was like, yes, let's do a show on this. So I am totally pumped about this. Cause like I said, I feel like that, Eric is, I actually said this before one time when I was doing a radio show about Polygrind promoting it. I think it was back when I did the show Ratline at the festival. I said that he was one of the kings of underground, and I totally feel that way. I mean, he's a filmmaker that's been making underground movies for I think close to 25 years now, and that's what he does. I mean, it's totally just he does these total passion projects that are whatever the hell he wants to do with them. He does like to push boundaries, and really just kind of I think he likes to kind of fuck with people's heads a bit.
I would say that's probably an accurate statement.
So this one is very much in line with like a lot of his especially his more recent movies. Especially Ratline. I see this one as a good trilogy to watch with Ratline and with Deadwood Park, which came right before Ratline. But it's very similar also to one of his early movies, Ice from the Sun, as well. So it's a good introduction, though, for people that don't know who he is, and the people that do know who Eric Stanzi is. This is a good, just like, extension of kind of you can see the progress of where he's going as a filmmaker as well, because this is a very like grand kind of epic film for how small of a budget it is.
Absolutely. I would say it's a for the obviously small budget, it's a very ambitious movie, and you know, it kind of has a lot going on in it, and it takes a lot of chances and all that kind of stuff. And I imagine that is kind of a thread that goes through a lot of, you know, filmmakers that you would call underground filmmakers, is that they take a lot of chances and try a lot of different kind of interesting and weird things along the way.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we can go ahead and jump into puzzle pieces. There's a bunch of other things that I could just kind of talk about along the way, but
I'm sure they'll come up as we go. So yeah, why don't we let you go ahead, since I'm sure you'll probably end up with more puzzle pieces than me on this one, but I want to hear your first one. Let's go with it.
Okay. So actually there were three or four as I was watching that kind of kept coming into my mind. And so the more I thought about it though, I think that this one was the most the most predominant one. And for me that was Easy Rider. Which Easy Rider is a movie that I absolutely love. It's one of my favorite movies. And I felt very much in many ways that this one, that there was some inspiration there. To give a couple of small examples, but one, not just the whole road trip aspect of it with the epic scenery, but specifically, there's a 360-degree slow-spinning camera scene in this where they're in like this hospital situation, and it's this group of people that they're finding out about this disease that they have, and there's some sort of experimental drug that they're going to be giving to them as a treatment. And so the camera just slowly spins around the room, and you see each person's face as they're telling the story about like what this disease is and what's going on. And there's a scene actually in Easy Rider where they do that exact thing, the circle around the room, and you see all the faces. It's actually a scene where they're visiting a cult. It's early on in the movie. And Easy Rider I haven't actually watched in several years, even though I do love that movie. But yeah, that moment right there totally was just like, oh my God, that's an Easy Rider moment right there. And then also there, one of the things that Eric does a lot in his movies is he does have scenes that run down locations, just like buildings that are decaying, that sort of thing. And just there's a moment later where the main character goes into this old rundown building and there's a TV in there. But just the way that was filmed, and you saw like this old decaying building It very much reminded me also of moments in Easy Rider where they're just going around and they kind of stop at a location for a little break and they go and they're running around and it's like this old decaying building. I think not only visually, though, I think there's some parallels also into the story as to what's going on as well. Because with Easy Rider, that was a movie to me about America at the time. Of course, that was in the late 60s, I believe 68 or so, I think, is when Easy Rider came out. And it's to me, it's a movie about longing for acceptance, and it's about searching America to basically fit in somewhere and to have peace of mind. So it's like they're on this journey in search of basically their place. They're in search for America. They're doing a big drug score is what they're doing, and they have money, and they're going to Mardi Gras so they can party. But it's about like them searching for something, and they're not really sure what it is. Is it money that they're looking for in life? Is it drugs? Is it partying? What is the answer for anything? And then I think the whole movie itself is just saying that acceptance is the answer, and that's what everybody is wanting. And it was kind of like a collective reflection of society at the time. And I think in many ways, I think this one is a search for meaning. And it's a kind of a reflection of society today as well. Without even really going into that, I think that that's what it was saying, even if that wasn't the intent. 'Cause so much history and culture is dying, eroding, disappearing. There's the technology side of that that's wiping out, you know, a lot of older technology and community. A good example is just movies and just the way that people even consume movies now. Sure. It's not the same as it was. So I think in many ways, this movie is this woman's journey, and she is there's so much that is like she's just confused about. She doesn't know what's going on. Everything is very fuzzy, and she's kind of searching, and she's on this character. She's not even exactly sure why she's on this journey. We're not sure why she's on this journey. Right. We don't really know what's going on. Neither does she. And she seems to think that there's this shiny and bright object that is important, which is this gold stopwatch, the old kind that you flip open and it's like, what do you call those? Pocket watch. Sure, And so it's almost like she thinks that that's what is important. But then it turns out that that's not really what even is the important thing even in the movie. And she's kind of chasing this shiny and bright object, and it's almost in an Alice in Wonderland kind of way. And she never actually gets the object physically either. So I think there's some play there. Just as I was saying about like collectively America, and what are we collectively in search of, and what is it that's actually important? And in that way, I think that parallels what was going on with Easy Rider, the reflection of the time then. And this is kind of a reflection of the time now. So again, like I said, to me, that was one of the big ones that just jumped out at me. And I love Easy Rider. So I was like, that's really cool.
That was really interesting. I did not get into it to that level to see something quite as deep and like meaningful about about the meaning and about parallels to anything specifically. Mine are, as we'll get into my puzzle pieces, you'll see they're a lot more visual and filmmaker related, filmmaking related. But I found that like very fascinating, the way that you drew that that comparison to Easy Rider. That's really cool. But yeah, I mean, going back to what you were just saying a little bit ago about those specific shots in Easy Rider that you felt there were some comparisons to, my first puzzle piece is actually The Evil Dead, the first one. Yeah, which, you know, obviously there's the first person through the wood shot, but there were other shots too, like the one you were just talking about. That shot is a similar thing happens in Evil Dead as well. Which was probably, right. I'm sure Raimi was influenced by Easy Rider. And so, you know, it all comes back around.
Right.
But yeah, no. And just like the spirit of independent filmmaking of making something interesting and unique with so little. Evil Dead was absolutely the first thing that came to mind watching the movie.
Right. Yeah, no, and totally, here's the thing, the climax of this movie, there were several things that came to mind when I was watching it, but Evil Dead 2 is definitely one that kind of comes to mind, how apeshit, you know, everything goes at the end of this movie, which I absolutely love the climax of this movie. To me, the climax works so well that it just makes the bulk of the movie, to me, just so much better, and the whole experience of it all. Because it's very much a slow burn kind of movie.
It is.
And then all of a sudden, shit just goes insane. So what's funny is that I feel the there was some influence Evil Dead wise with that ending. Specifically for me, Evil Dead 2.
Definitely both. I would say really Sam Raimi in general, but
right.
But yeah, definitely Evil Dead 2 for sure.
But what's funny is here's the thing, because it is neat when we talk about influences and inspirations, and for the most part, a lot of times we don't know really where the director's coming from, and we're kind of we're viewing it from our own eyes, and we see things in it that maybe they didn't even intend, which was neat, because you did do the show having the director of Bus Party to Hell, and we were right on some of them, and then some of them we weren't, and there were some that we didn't even see that he brought up. But I did see a quote that Eric had did on the movie, and I thought this was very interesting, because he does talk about there's a director's commentary on the Blu-ray, which I did listen to, and he does hit on some of these, but he doesn't hit on every one of these that he mentions in this quote here. So I was going to go ahead and read this quote, and I didn't catch any of these, but I totally see it once I saw this quote. So this is what he said, though. He said, "I love road trip films of the 70s like Two-Lane Blacktop, Badlands, Scarecrow, and Vanishing Point. I love off the beaten path, fever dream films like what David Lynch has done. I love early David Cronenberg sci-fi body horror. I wanted to experiment with combining all of this, and the result was In Memory Of," which I thought was interesting, because I hadn't even seen some of those road trip movies that he mentioned. Badlands, of course, was just a classic, but I would think probably 9 times out of 10 that all of those, and in fact, I think most road trip movies were probably inspired by Easy Rider in some way,
right.
especially the early ones. I mean, it has to be one of the first actual like cross country type movies. And then also, I mean, you mentioned early Raimi, which, of course, are like early Cronenberg, which is different, but again, it's kind of in that same spirit of the total like underground indie type of horror, really just kind of experimenting and going in whatever direction that they feel like, and not feeling like that they have to make it go into a certain box, which is exactly what happens so many times when people make horror movies, which makes them, you know, not as interesting, not as fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, but, absolutely.
But you know, the funny thing though, is it's also sometimes with these, I mean, like, I, I was going to wait till we do the episode and have Eric listen to it. But I'm curious if Easy Rider was an influence or if that was just something that kind of leaked in without him even realizing, because that happens as well. And the same thing with Evil Dead. I think that kind of anybody that's a fan of horror, I think Evil Dead's going to leak in. You know what I mean? It's one of those that's just such an influential series of movies, really.
Yeah, I almost didn't even bring it up because it's like, of course, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I was immediately thinking Evil Dead when I was watching it. And so I was like, all right, yeah, I'm going to bring it up for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my next puzzle piece is actually another movie that I'm a really, really big fan of. And I love it when I get to talk about movies that I'm a big fan of. I love it when a movie makes me think of other great movies. Memento. Cool. Because, you know, Memento is one of those movies where the lead character is totally confused and doesn't know what's going on, and they're just kind of stumbling around. You've got that element of memory loss, which this one does. We hadn't talked much about what's going on with the movie, but basically you have in this movie, a woman who she is suffering from some type of disease where she is having memory loss at a very young age. I think she's maybe early 20s. And then she goes to some type of experimental clinic to get help with the disease. But something goes wrong and she wakes up and basically it's a bloodbath. Everybody's dead. And so then she's trying to figure out what the hell, why can't I remember anything and what the hell happened? And she is just, it's kind of like a murder mystery in a way. And also this, just playing with the memory loss. And that is very much in line with Memento, the exploration of memory and confusion. And then also like the murder mystery to be solved. Again, another movie that I love, like it's one of those very high up on my list of like all time movies. My very favorite, Christopher Nolan movie. I hadn't seen it in years though, to draw like, any specific parallels or to see if there were any actual like nods with scenes or anything like that. But, it was totally one that jumped out at me as this is Memento.
Well, no, I think that's a great, great one. I'm surprised I hadn't thought of that while I was watching it. Cause I mean, definitely I see it 100%. The especially with like the something going on with the brain and not knowing what it is, and like you're kind of as lost as the character is, and like, you know, definitely I think Memento is a really good one. That's a really good puzzle piece. You know, my next puzzle piece actually is a movie that came out the same year as Memento, and that is Requiem for a Dream.
Nice. Well, what's funny is I didn't put that down, but I don't know if you noticed, but the poster is in the background in one of the scenes. Did you notice that?
Yes, okay. I did notice that. Yes. I don't remember if I was already thinking it when I saw the poster or if I saw the poster and then thought it. But I mean, you got these people that are just they're just falling apart, you know what I mean? And and so I mean that's a pretty clear another thing aside from the characters, and this kind of goes along with what I was just saying about Sam Raimi with my first puzzle piece, Aronofsky's early movies I think are another example of that, just anything goes, like underground, like balls to the wall kind of filmmaking, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, they're just crazy movies that are like so far removed from the mainstream, really. And you know, of course, Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream is, you know, a little more well known than some, you know, things that are in that category, but still it's a pretty tough movie for most people. And I think that this also has no, I don't think the filmmaker is worried at all about it being a tough movie for people.
Right, he's right.
Making an uncompromising vision, you know.
And then specifically Requiem to also the scene that's very, very sleazy with the boyfriend. He's videotaping her with the guy who's paying to have sex with her. And you've got the manager in the corner watching and the other girl watching. And then she stabs him as he ejaculates. And you actually see the ejaculate come out at the same time as the blood.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. Definitely a nod I felt to that Requiem scene, which of course we talked about in another episode already, which I thought was interesting, which I didn't even put it on my list because, like I said, we did talk about it for just a couple of episodes before, but I remember seeing the poster, and then later when that scene happened, when she stabbed the guy, and I was like, oh yeah, this is definitely inspired from that.
It's so funny. This is only the second like really independent film that we've done on Piecing It Together, and both of them have had Evil Dead and Requiem for a Dream as puzzle pieces.
right.
So I think there's a trend.
Well, the other funny thing there too is that this is like at least the third or maybe the fourth episode where I mentioned a Peter Fonda movie.
There you go. Yeah.
So yeah. Those three things there, I think maybe they influenced more than we ever realized before.
So what would your next puzzle piece be?
Okay, so High Tension, early 2000s Alexandre Aja movie.
I hadn't thought of that at all, by the way. And as soon as the words came out of your mouth, I was like, yes, yes.
So yeah, because High Tension is one that I love a lot too, and I know a lot of people, they give that movie crap because people hate that. Like they feel that the movie cheats them in a way because of this twist. But for me, that movie totally works and the twist works. But, you know, I kind of feel like that the lead actress in this movie, Jackie Kelly, she kind of even looks like the lead actress from High Tension. You know, she has the short pixie blonde hair. Which interesting thing though about Jackie Kelly is that this is actually the first feature that she's ever been in, a funny thing is that she actually I think she just had finished film school, or maybe she's still in film school, but she was a fan of Eric's, and she actually contacted and said, "Hey, I really love your movies. I want to work on one of your movies. Whatever your next project is, let me know. I'll be there. I'll serve coffee. I'll do whatever, you know, I'll be a runner. I just want to be a part of it. I want to help." And so they actually ended up meeting with Jackie, and they just like hit it off with her. This would be Eric and Jason Christ, which he's the other star of this movie, who was also the producer. And actually, Jackie, Eric, and Jason actually wrote the movie. So she started out as somebody that was just going to volunteer to work on whatever project they had going on. And she actually ended up helping write the script. And then they were like, okay, well, we're going to produce it. So they wrote it, they're going to produce it. And then they weren't even thinking that she was actually going to be in the movie. And then at some point it just clicked with Eric, and he's like, you know what? You should star in this. And at first she was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. It's a little bit too much. But she then ended up taking the part, and I think she's perfect for it. And again, like I said, I feel like her look, it kind of nods to High Tension. Not only though is there that nod to it, but also of course High Tension is dealing with some sort of, you know, mental disorder of some kind. Obviously, sure. There's lots of hallucinations and things of that nature, and you're dealing with a very, you know, off-balance person who is actually a, you know, homicidal maniac. So you've got those same parallels going on here with this movie. Anyway, so yeah, High Tension, another movie I love. You know, Memento and High Tension also, they're not necessarily road trip movies, but they also have a lot of, you know, being in a car type of situations to them, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that was another thing that really made me think of both of those movies as well. Cause this movie, I mean, I would say at least, you know, well, the whole movie, she's basically in the car going somewhere, and it's kind of going place to place. It's not that she's actually in the car the whole time, but she is, you know, being in the car is a huge piece of the movie. So
sure. Right on. You know, I was just thinking that, I need to try as you know, a music composer for film. I need to try the whole I'll make coffee line.
Some more gigs. Right.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think anybody can contact Eric Stanzi and say, "Hey, I want to make coffee on your movies. I want to deliver you coffee." And I don't think that means they're going to star in his next movie. But
sure,
you know, sometimes you know, magical things happen.
Yes, sometimes you never never know. So my next puzzle piece. Now, I got to preface this one by saying I could be totally wrong on this one because I haven't seen this movie in a long, long time, and I barely remember this movie. But my very broken memory of the movie made me think of it, and maybe I'm right. I have a feeling you'll be able to tell me whether I'm right here. But The Devil's Rejects.
No, that's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, the road trip aspect, the horror aspect, the violence, the over the topness, the, you know,
I totally get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
What's funny because I mean, Devil's Rejects, was definitely around the same time, I think, of High Tension. And then also one of the ones that I was thinking of was actually Saw. And they were all three around that same time. So I think it definitely that early 2000s, like Lionsgate horror, when Lionsgate was really putting out like some really cool, you know, edgy type of R-rated horror movies. I totally see that. It wasn't one that came to mind with me either. I think there's also that's with you know, Devil's Rejects and Rob Zombie. He loves to play with this because obviously it's his wife, Sherry Lee Zombie, and he likes to play with that whole aspect of like Beauty and the Beast as within one person, and I think this one kind of toys with that aspect as well. And so that's another element, though, that totally falls in line with Devil's Rejects. Now, the difference would be, well, now that you think of it, though, now that you mentioned that, House of a Thousand Corpses, the way that it opens, the opening credits of it, and I didn't even think of this at the time, is a lot, if I'm remembering correctly, a lot kind of like the opening credits of this. Very music video with a lot of different weird shit going on and clips of different things. This movie is very music video in some aspects, and especially like the opening credits, which is funny because I remember when you first watched it, and yeah, I guess it was as you was watching it, you texted me, you said, "Hey, opening credits remind me of a music video of mine."
Yeah, this is a Music by David Rosen video.
I could totally see a Devil's Rejects nod there. Definitely the spirit of those early Lionsgate, was it wasn't there a name like Twisted something that they called those? I think there was kind of like an offshoot label that Lionsgate had.
Oh, I think you're right. I can't remember the name. I remember that logo.
Yeah, with the little railroad spikes and barbed wire twisting. So, but no, they were putting out good like horror movies, fun horror movies, in the early 2000s. Maybe 2004, 2003, 2005, and around in that area. So my next puzzle piece, which I actually I mentioned it, and I think actually there's several kind of in the same vein that I'll kind of hit on here, but Carnival of Souls, 1962 movie. It's kind of it's one of those movies that's kind of overlooked by a lot of people. It's a very surreal black and white movie. In that movie, the main actress, she, and this is actually a public domain movie, if I'm not mistaken. She gets into a car crash and everybody dies except for her. Like they go off a bridge and, she gets up out of it and like goes on with her life, and the movie follows her, and all of this weird stuff just happens to her, and these weird people follow her and stuff. And there's a scene early on too, where she's driving, which is funny because she actually, I don't remember where the movie starts out, but I did rewatch Carnival of Souls after watching In Memory of, because it did remind me of it. In Carnival of Souls, at the beginning, she drives to Utah, which in this movie, Utah is where the character ends up going. She starts out in, I believe, Missouri, and then, because that's where they're based, and then drives through like Illinois, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, ends up in Utah. So anyway, I thought that was interesting that the character, which she is blonde, but she has long hair in Carnival Souls. But it's just very, what really reminded me of that movie was just the whole surreal aspect of this movie. It's a very surreal movie. It's a very like dreamy kind of movie of, you don't really know what's real, what's not, what's really happening. And then when it's over, you don't really know either. I feel like the whole thing's just kind of like a dream, which also kind of reminded me in many ways too of, like old episodes of The Twilight Zone and Tales from the Dark Side, and specifically like the black and white scenes. There's these, you know, black and white scenes that pop up throughout the movie that are very dreamy and just very just like, and they have even like a Tales from the Dark Side kind of soundtrack going on with them too. And then also at the same time, Psycho. I was reminded of Psycho in that aspect as well, because again, in Psycho, she starts out and she's in the car and she's escaping where she is, and she ends up at the motel. But not only that, this has a shower scene as well. It's a little bit different than Psycho, but there is a close-up like shot of her face and the terror on her face that kind of felt reminiscent of Psycho. those four, though, that I just mentioned, Carnival of Souls, Twilight Zone, Tales from the Dark Side, Psycho, they just, to me, kind of blended together, but I definitely felt a puzzle piece there from all of them in some sort of way.
Absolutely. No, I agree with all of those. Like, it's a great list of things that leads... It's really something we've been talking about this whole time, which is basically just like really imaginative, creative horror filmmaking.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My next puzzle piece is actually something I could have stopped you earlier and brought up, but I figured I'd wait until it was my turn and bring it up. But you had touched on music videos, and I specifically was going to say the Nine Inch Nails Closer music video. Which, you know, it's got lots of weird cutaways to like weird shit happening, like bugs crawling around and like naked people and broken lamps and lights. Right, this is also this is the music by David Rosen aspect of that part of that conversation on music videos. But yeah, absolutely. The Nine Inch Nails Closer was the most specific I felt as far as a music video influencing this movie. And it's so influential to me as well with what I try to put together with my videos, you know. Such a good video. and so much weird shit, you know, just so much cool, weird shit. And they really do like a lot of cutaways and like also a lot of like another aspect too of that is I could be wrong about this, but I felt like there were a lot of times where like little bits and pieces were being almost reused, possibly maybe in different ways, like where the footage was being shown again, but like different. I don't know. It just in the midst of all that madness, it seemed that way. I could be wrong.
Totally. There is some of that. There's and actually there's the one like scene is shown, I think, like four times, and it's like a little bit different each time that it is shown. And it's like, well, you've got the black and white part where she's walking through the woods naked, and you've got the guy who's he's burying the dead people, and so you see that scene, I think four times, because each one of the characters, we see them basically be buried, and then it changes at the very end with her. And then there are smaller bits and pieces too that I do believe are also shown over and over in that same aspect. Again, it's playing with that whole element of like confusion and memory, like not really sure what happened or what's happening or remembering things wrong, kind of playing with that whole aspect of it, I think.
It's mirroring the visions of like a mind that's deteriorating,
right?
And it looks really cool.
Definitely there is that whole like music video kind of vibe to that, again, I think overall this one it has that in a lot of ways, which I mean very much that's kind of something that Eric does with his movies quite a bit, actually, a music video kind of quality. So, which brings me to one that I had thought of, which was very, one of the, I feel very early, you know, mainstream, music video kind of movies. And that was, Natural Born Killers, I think is very influential in many ways to lots and lots and lots of music videos. 'Cause it's essentially like a music video cartoon, fucked up like Jerry Springer show or something. Natural Born Killers is such a total classic, but the thing though that really reminded me though of Natural Born Killers was the scene that she's watching on TV, which was kind of this very Jerry Springer kind of vibe of a very over the top with one of the characters who was watching a show like Jerry Springer. And they were talking about him. It was like a preacher, and they were talking about the pocket watch. But anyway, that part, and then also just the whole music video aspect as well. I actually only have, I have two more that I was going to mention as far as like puzzle pieces, and they weren't really like full-blown puzzle pieces, but so Rosemary's Baby. Now, two reasons. One, the whole just look of the main character again, the whole just young, innocent, pixie, blonde hair, lead of the film. And then also the fact that that was such a slow burn kind of horror movie, you know, kind of a very slow building movie that then after it was over, you were just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And this one, of course, this one totally explodes in a very underground, almost Greg Lamberson, Evil Dead kind of way that one doesn't. But it definitely has that that build to it, like that movie.
Mm. No, I absolutely, yeah. That slow build is definitely something that this movie is. You know, this movie is a slow right. burn to a what the fuck ending for sure. A little bit different of a what the fuck ending, but still what the fuck.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. So my last puzzle piece is. Honestly, this one's kind of a cop out a little bit, but I still felt it was appropriate to mention. But it's whatever American Horror Story is inspired by, which is basically everything we've been talking about and a million more things too.
Right.
But American Horror Story, obviously being a anthology series, there's just so much happening every season. To just say American Horror Story wouldn't be accurate. So it's more about all the different kinds of the rich history of horror and odd stuff that's been, you know, put to film over all the decades. And that's more what I'm talking about.
Well, and also, though, the current just climate of America as well.
Sure.
And that was kind of what I was hitting on at the beginning when I was talking about the kind of the parallel to Easy Rider as well, mm-hmm. because American Horror Story is very much in tune with what's going on and the whole like masses as to like, you know, just, you know, the confusion of where the country is going, you know what I mean? And that side of it as well. So, I mean, I totally see that as well. I totally see American Horror Story. So, I think that's actually a really good one. Totally, because the American Horror Story is influenced by so many things that are horror related from the past, and then also just like I said, the whole just climate of the country, especially the whole thing. Like I was saying, just the kind of the confusion, or at least what I was trying to get at was the confusion of America and the country as to where we're headed and what's going on. You know, I think that's kind of what this movie kind of taps into with that just kind of fear and anxiety that American Horror Story, especially the past several seasons, has really been in tune with.
Yeah, it's definitely been tapping into what's happening currently a lot more recently. And yeah, definitely this movie does do that as well.
Right.
You had one more?
I had one more, and actually it's actually a cop-out, and that's funny because when you said cop-out, I thought you were going to say this one.
Oh, really?
Because I don't really feel it was an influence or anything in a way, anyway, but I felt like it was a good one to bring up into the discussion of this movie, and that's Annihilation, which was actually the first episode that we did. I feel that movie and the way that movie operates is a lot like the way this movie operates. This one, I think, more so lets the audience... because I felt like we were supposed to know what happened in a way... I don't think it was supposed to be a shock or a twist at the end when things go apeshit. I think we were kind of supposed to know that she, you know, killed all the people, or at least that's what I thought from the get-go.
Right.
I thought that she killed everybody and she has just forgotten it, and that the movie was going to be her traveling along until she finally remembered what she did. To me, though, the way that movie toyed with you, and also how it was more of a movie that kind of totally art film, that it is open to whatever you want to say it's about.
No
director
absolutely.
Statement guiding you to say, here's what the movie's about. It's just kind of really, you know, weird shit happens and you just go along for the ride and, you know, make of it what you want to make of it.
Yeah.
So. along the same lines of Mother, had Mother not had the whole push by the director to let us know what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say, and you know, obviously with Rosemary's Baby that you brought up earlier, you know, you got that as well, but,
right.
Yeah, definitely. That's a cool one. And a good one, I think, to close the list on, because that really says it right there. And so I think I'm going to do the finished puzzle here. And we have got quite a few here to talk about. So let's see. We have got Evil Dead and Sam Raimi's films. We've got Easy Rider, Memento, High Tension, Saw. We've got The Devil's Rejects, Requiem for a Dream, Carnival of Souls, Tales from the Dark Side, Twilight Zone, Psycho, Natural Born Killers, music videos, especially Nine Inch Nails, Closer, whatever American Horror Story was inspired by, Rosemary's Baby, and Annihilation. So that is that's our finished puzzle list. A lot of very creative, independent horror. A lot of unique visions. And I mean, I think that's exactly why you like a filmmaker like this and why you brought this movie to the show and why you wanted to cover something like this.
Right. Yeah, definitely. The type of filmmakers that I really admire and really like are the ones that are basically doing their own thing, you know, not really going into the trends. And we hit on a number of them with that list there. I didn't even bring it up, but you know, I mentioned Natural Born Killers, but also at the same time of Natural Born Killers, the same vein as that U-Turn. You know, Oliver Stone, he was kind of doing those weird, I don't know, I see those movies very much kind of as a good pairing together. And I think this one, I could pull comparisons to U-Turn just as much as Natural Born Killers. Obviously, the setting of this one, because you do have a lot of the beautiful, like, desert scenery and things of that nature. But no, yeah. I mean, artistic creators basically doing whatever the hell that they want and making a movie because they have a vision as opposed to trying to check off something on a list and make a movie that's going to fit in a certain box that people are going to want to see because it meets all of those things in that box. So, sure. No, definitely.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought this this movie to the show because, as you know, I don't get to watch a lot of movies at home. So since most of what I see is in the theater, I don't really get to see these kind of strange independent films very often, you know, especially since you haven't been doing Polygrind. And so,
right.
You know, it's cool to, you know, check back in on this kind of a film again and see this kind of a thing. It's so different and unique and really crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't even know if we really hit on that too much. Of course, we can kind of talk about what we liked and whatever about it. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing for people that aren't familiar with Eric's movies, blood, nudity, sex, all of those things. He loves to push the envelope with all of those things, and you get plenty of that here. Male and female nudity. Lots of great gore. It's kind of a bit of a long movie. To me, this was, could be trimmed down some, but overall I enjoyed it quite a bit. I think that, the climax of this movie is absolutely fabulous. I love the end of this movie. It is so good. I've watched it a number of times just cause I just love it so much. I mean, it goes so apeshit. It's where you wish. It's kind of because I brought up Saw. It's kind of how you wish the Saw movies ended. like kind of how, where you went, wish that they went. Like you wish that they basically just everybody getting slaughtered and blood everywhere. Yeah. So I totally, totally just love
give
that
the about people
this.
What they want.
and total just like bashing somebody's head in until the head's not there anymore, which we didn't mention. Sure. That was kind of I felt kind of a nod in a way to what was the one I was thinking? Drive. There's the scene in the elevator. and then the other movie, Irreversible. There's a scene kind of like that as well. So, it totally, that's the thing is if anybody is watching the movie and they feel it's a little slow, well, the climax definitely pays off. It's totally, totally worth the wait. At least for me, I totally just loved it. And again, I thought the acting on this was pretty good, for low budget as it is. Jackie Kelly in her first film, I thought she was really great. She carries the movie. And then, Jason Christ, which he's basically the guy, Simon, who's telling her what to do, where to go. Jason, he's been in many of, Eric's movies and collaborated, with him as a producer and whatnot, but, I felt like this was his strongest, performance. I definitely see this was a nice fit for him. And then also at the same time, I think he's, getting better as an actor. But a couple of interesting things I wanted to mention as far as the actors, Adam Albrandt, he's the sleazy boyfriend. He actually was the director of a couple of movies that I showed at Polygrind, called Crossbearer in the Cemetery, which were also very cool, like dark, bloody underground movies. That if people listening hadn't seen, they need to check out. And Adam was kind of like me, he was a big fan of Eric's. It was like a big, big honor for him to actually work with him as an actor. And I didn't even know that Adam acted. I just thought he was a director himself, which I thought was interesting. And then also Emily Hack, she's in the movie, which she's one of the actresses that Eric works with quite a bit. She's the one from the movie Scrapbook, which I mentioned at the very beginning, one of the most disturbing movies I've ever seen. Eric works with a lot of the same actors. A lot of the other people have been in a lot of his other movies as well. But then also Katie Groshong, she's in this. She has a small part in the scene that I talked about with the rotating camera. She's one of the scientists, but she was in a movie called Measure of the Sin, which I played at Polygrind as well, which was a very cool indie movie about a weird, like, cult kind of family. Like kind of, it has kind of like a vibe of The Village. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere kind of deal. But anyway, again, very, very cool. Just bunch of like, creative, people involved with this project, which I thought was really cool. The Blu-ray comes actually with a 93 minute, making of documentary, which I thought was awesome as well. It goes through the whole process of making of the movie. It talks about how Jackie got involved with the project and how that, you know, came about that she ended up playing the part. But again, for somebody that their first feature film, very, very brave, performance by her. I mean, she basically, you know, fully nude multiple times, sleazy sex scene. Yeah. There's lots of, you know, I would say, kind of, hard moments, especially for an actress that, hasn't, been doing, movies. So anyway,
by the way, I think I'm Facebook friends with Katie Groshong.
Probably so. Yeah, she was at Polygrind, so you may have met her. She was there like several days. So yeah.
Nice.
No, she's cool.
Right on. So would this movie have played Polygrind, you think, this year?
Oh, definitely, 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 definitely. Had I had Polygrind this year, this and totally different movie, but Bus Party to Hell, they totally both would have been playing.
Nice.
So,
awesome.
So no, yeah. Definitely experimental, art house, underground, those all are good ways to term this movie. So yeah, very for as low budget as it is too. I thought it was really cool of the scope of this with Eric and Jason and Jackie, they actually got in the car and drove the route that the character in the movie drives, and they filmed through all of the states. And so
that must have been a mind trip.
Yeah, exactly. So that I think was really, really cool because, most small movies like this, if they're going to be actually saying that, they're in this state or that state, they're not actually going to be in those states. But in this case, you do actually get to see shots from all those different states, and you get to see a lot of, great road trip scenery. Which again has that like Easy Rider kind of feeling to it.
No, that's cool. That's cool. Very, very, very huge scope to the movie, which for a small independent feature really stands out.
Right.
Well, right on. I think that was a really cool movie for us to do. And thanks again for bringing it to the show. And any last words or anything you want to plug or anything before we close it up?
Oh, no. I'm good. But if anybody listening, if they've never seen any of Eric's movies, they need to run out. Well, they can't actually run out and get them anywhere. They need to log on and order them.
Log on.
They need to go to the Wicked Pixel website and actually get their hands on some of his movies. He's a very, very good. Like I said, he's one of the underground kings of our modern day filmmaking. So
hustle, fight, grind.
Yep.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. I'm Steve Megatron, and if you're looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of geeky topics, then check out Altered Geek. Altered Geek covers superheroes, Star Trek, pop culture, comics, film, television, animation, gaming, tech, and more. So check out Altered Geek and get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks every Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, and the Geekcast Radio Network.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that episode of Piecing It Together in memory of. It's a really cool movie. Check it out. You have to order this one. It's on Blu-ray. You will not find it anywhere else. But definitely seek that movie out because it is a cool movie. It's a crazy movie. You should definitely check it out. And hopefully you've actually already seen the movie and came here to listen to our conversation about it. That would be awesome. So anyway, as always, I want to just remind you guys, please be subscribed to the show. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Google Play, pretty much anywhere the podcasts are available. And also join us on that Facebook group, Piecing It Together, a movie discussion group, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. That's going to be it for this episode, but we will be back really soon with another one really quick. So I'm just going to leave you now with one of my pieces of music here. I'm going to find a weird one to go with this crazy movie. And yeah. Hope you enjoy the music, hope you enjoy the episode, and we'll talk to you soon.
and all points west.